Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to our very strong finish to the work week here on Catholic Answers Live. Our guest this hour is the reason that it never bothers me when people call me a knucklehead. And I will explain that in a minute. Our topic this hour, how to talk to a skeptic, which is an area that Don Johnson explores a great deal in his ministry, and I know is an area of great passion for him. So if you'd like to talk about how to talk to a skeptic, 888-318-7884 is our number. Maybe you have a question, or maybe you have a suggestion, or maybe you just like to talk with Don about how these things are done. Don is the maker of the movie Convinced. Don, the name of your book, you got to help me.
Is How to Talk to a Skeptic.
How to Talk to a Skeptic. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Very easy to remember.
Probably should have remembered that. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. You're working on a new movie too, Don.
I am. I'm very excited about it. It's called Unprotected.
And it's about the sexual revolution.
It is about the sexual revolution. And it actually ties a little bit into our topic today, because I'm an evangelist first and foremost. You know, that's what I do.
Right.
Interact with people, try to draw them towards Jesus. And I found over the years that one of the major reasons people are rejecting Jesus ultimately, or there's some roadblocks, is sex. Sex is a big deal, and the sexual revolution is, I think, I've heard this said a few times lately, and I'm really starting to buy it. I think it's the central fact of our time.
I think you're right. You know, I was talking with a catechist, and she works with young people preparing to make their confirmation. And she said there is no question except that among teenagers today who are struggling with the Catholic faith and should I be Catholic, should I not be Catholic, the number one thing they want to know about, they can't get their head around, is the church's teaching on gay marriage, or the church's teaching on marriage in general, and why the church teaches what it does about gay marriage.
Yeah, it's huge. And it all goes back. I mean, it's not just gay marriage, but ultimately the whole sexual ethic of the church, starting with contraception and moving on from there, is on one hand a huge roadblock, because they don't understand it. And here's why I'm making the movie. It's also ultimately the biggest draw towards the church. When people do understand the beauty of the teaching of the church and theology of the body and all that stuff, it's this huge draw. And so, I know that we don't want to get too far afield here, Si, I understand. But that's why I'm making the movie as an evangelist, is that the story of the sexual revolution and the exodus from the church, those things are really tied together. And
they are.
We can turn those things around as we understand that story and as we understand church's teaching on it.
Right. And one of the things, I know you know this statistic, but we're losing young people, the hearts and minds of young people as young as sixth grade these days. It is connected, at least in part, to internet stuff. Yeah. And I think when you're in sixth grade, you're very vulnerable to a clever phrase or these memes that are online. And I think we're slow as a church to respond to these things. So let me start by asking you this. And please give us a call if you have questions about how to talk as a Christian person to a skeptic. The number 888-318-7884. Our guest, Don Johnson. And Don, let me just ask you about the online environment in general. Could we be doing a better job as Christians online?
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, I want to say the best job we could do would be to get offline. But I know that that's not reasonable. I understand that. But, you know, I wrote my book a few years back, How to Talk to a Skeptic. And I actually, if I wrote it today, I would add a chapter at the beginning of it. And I would say that first, in order to talk, you actually have to talk. And I think we're missing a big step in this.
We
think that we're out there having some sort of effect by posting our memes or our angry diatribes or our articles to this and that and all that. But it's all online, and we don't actually ever talk to the person or seek to find where they're coming from or any of that. And it's doing so much damage, Si. I mean, so much damage, the anger and the vitriol two evangelization efforts, mm-hmm. I don't think we can underestimate it.
No, I have to say I've fallen prey to it myself sometimes online. You're engaged in a conversation somewhere online, and there's a point at which you may just forget that it's a human being that you're dealing with and think that it's an idea that you're refuting. And so you say it with a kind of language that's stronger than you really wanted it to be, or that I probably would be embarrassed if I were looking that person in the eye. If I were face to face with that person, I don't think I would talk that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, there is a service. I don't know the name of it, and I'm not here to promote it. But there's this debate program online, but they make you video chat. And I actually know one of the guys who's a big debater this. And he said, Don, you would not believe the difference in a debate when you actually have to see the person,
right.
When you actually have to get on Skype or whatever. It's
right.
A whole different ballgame. And you're exactly right. It's the depersonalization. We think we can just throw stuff out there and, well, we don't have any particular person in mind and we're not interacting with an individual,
right.
But rather with this group or with this movement or whatever.
Right.
And the problem is there are people. You know, there are people on the other end of the line.
Yeah.
And by doing our name calling and all that stuff, they're taking it personally.
Yeah.
And I think rightly so. And it's a huge problem.
888-31-TRUTH, how to talk to a skeptic, our topic this hour, 888-318-7884. The thing about using the harsh language online and all that kind of thing is the fact is, however, there are things that are unjust in this world, like tremendously unjust. And I think sometimes we want, you know, if you're engaging in a pro-life type debate online, or you're talking about, you know, like the Little Sisters of the Poor being forced to pay for contraception or any of these things, you know, that are really for us as Christians, it's like, what? You know, we kind of have a harsh reaction to that. How do you respond to injustice in a way that both speaks up for what's just and right, but is also not being a pain in the neck online?
Well, I think one of the first things to do is to realize that that person on the other side is also probably thinking that they're speaking up for injustice, and they very well might be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we do our pro-life arguments, we have that baby in mind. Or when we do the Little Sisters, we have that nun in mind. Yet when we do, a diatribe against, and I don't mean to open up the phone lines. I know this is a super hot topic, but like the kneelers, for instance. Well, those are people too, and there's people who have faced injustice behind that.
Yeah.
And we tend not to think like the name I was talking about this last week. This is why I feel comfortable doing it on Patrick Madrid's show, a friend of both of ours, you know, and having this great conversation.
Oh no, yeah, I see.
But I brought up one of the articles I read from an upstanding Catholic magazine was talking about all of these selfish, a whole list of names that they were calling these players.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, hold on, that's a person too, right? Like that's somebody with a mother and a daughter. Like,
yeah, right.
And the person that they're trying to stand up for is a person too.
Right.
Having injustice in mind individually, I think, and realizing that there's a whole bunch of individuals that are trying to interact rather than a bunch of movements. I get the movement sometimes, you know, yeah, I want to dismiss that movement and that movement. And I get that.
Right.
But speaking individually, that's the level we need to get to. Because it's individuals who are going to show up in heaven, right? It's the individuals with the with the eternal souls. Individuals will outlast every movement that comes and goes, every nation. Ultimately, the individual is who we need to love.
Right. You can have a wonderful movement, but if it doesn't move souls to heaven, it's temporary.
Yeah,
it's awfully temporary.
Right.
Excuse me. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll take your calls for Don Johnson on how to talk to a skeptic right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
It's October, and as we head to the end of the year, Catholic Answers is kicking off its annual winter sale in its newly redesigned online shop with great discounts on all of the books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s that we carry. With great new releases on church history, scripture, Bible prophecy, and the saints, the shop at Catholic.com is once again your go-to place for solid Catholic resources with a store-wide discount to boot. Just enter the promo code WINTER at checkout and you'll save 20% off your total purchase. That's right, 20% off the hundreds of great Catholic resources we have in our online store from now till the end of the year. To get those discounts, just go to shop.catholic.com. That's shop.catholic.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the greatest final hour of the work week anywhere in America, the last hour of Catholic Answers today. Don Johnson is our guest, and I made a comment about how I don't mind being called a knucklehead because of you, and then I never explained it. And that it has to do with there was a brief shining moment in time when we both were part of a radio team called Kalen and the Knuckleheads.
It was the apex of history, really.
It was. That was the high point of history. Everything after that.
Everything after those.
Yeah, but I hope we'll do it again sometime.
It was fun, yeah.
Because you still get to work with Kalen. I hear you on the radio working with Kalen, but nobody calls me. But, well, no. My feelings aren't hurt. We're talking about how to talk to a skeptic. Lots and lots of folks on the line. So how about we head to calls then?
Let's do it.
All right. James in Rome, New York, watching on Facebook. Thanks for joining us there, James. Your question for Don Johnson.
The great skeptic Bill Maher likes to mention the idea of the talking snake. Catholic teaching seems to suggest that the story of Adam and Eve is allegorical rather than historical. If the story is allegorical, does that mean we are not meant to understand original sin as a historical event? Thanks.
Thanks, James.
Great question, James. And to your first, do we have to understand it literally, or can it be an allegory? I don't even know if we'd call it an allegory necessarily, but not necessarily literal history. Absolutely. We as Catholics can take Genesis as not literal history. I would call it more poetic.
For example, when he says talking snake, the snake could be a symbol. But that's not to say Satan isn't present.
No.
But we don't have to necessarily think of Satan as a snake.
As a snake. That's right. And Bill Maher is a great example of the type of skeptic my book addresses, actually, because a skeptic will often either misrepresent or just simply not understand proper Christian theology. And so I spend a lot of time in the book just saying, this is what skeptics need to know before you start debating, sort of thing. To your second one, is original sin a historical event? Yes, we do as Catholics believe original sin is a historical event. We needed a space-time fall in order to make sense of this thing, and we need a space-time savior. So Jesus is not symbolic. Jesus is symbolic in some senses, but Jesus came as a flesh and blood man and saved us in time and space because we fell in time and space. And so, yes.
It did indeed happen.
Yeah.
And we are not ashamed to say it. Riley in Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening to Catholic Radio on 990 AM. You are on with Don Johnson. Your question about how to talk to a skeptic.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. So I work in the mental health field, and the colleagues that I usually work with are behaviorists, which follow the line of B.F. Skinner, a prominent psychologist in the 50s. And the work that he did is kind of worked on this foundation of determinism, basically that the history of somebody, their learning history, and the contingencies that are in the environment at the moment dictate people's behavior. And if you know those, you can predict with almost 100% accuracy what they're going to do, which makes any choice kind of moot. So there's a lot of skeptics that I work with, and I don't know exactly how to counter those kind of claims that we do, in fact, have free will.
Great question, Riley. We appreciate it. So here's what I would do. First, ask a bunch of questions to determine for yourself just how much of a determinist your colleagues are. So do they, for example, believe that, in fact, we live in this closed system of cause and effect where every single thing that happens is the predetermined, if you will, effect of a whole bunch of causes? And that just goes back to the very beginning. So at the very beginning, you had whatever you had. And after that, everything was determined. Every single thing could not have been other than it is. If they believe that, if they're willing to grant that, then you can start asking questions. All right, well, what about this? Because that takes a whole lot of things off the table that we sort of take for granted on a day-to-day basis, like deciding what cereal to eat in the morning, and things like, for example, love. So chances are those that are in relationships actually think that those relationships involve a lot of free will, that when you get up and do something nice for your girlfriend or your spouse or whatever it is, that you should be accoladed, if you will, that you should get some sort of value for that, that they should see that as valuing them, that they should see that as an act of free will. And then when they do something for you, they're expecting you to do the same. Because if that isn't the case, if in fact it is just all of our genes and our biology and all the rest of it, then all that's happening is basically chemical reactions, and I'm doing this not based on any choices I made. So it does away with things like love. It does away with things like good and evil. There is no such thing as good and evil in that system, because every act you did could not have been anything else. And so in order for something to be moral, it had to have an agent involved. You had to have free will. So I would just push them a little bit. Is that the kind of universe you think we live in? Does the data support that? If that's the case, you know, could you have done anything else than what you're doing? And are we really having any sort of effect here? I suspect, Riley, that they're not so strong on it, that they do admit that some aspects of the world are more open to free will. And if that's the case, then you can just say, all right, well, then you've opened it up to a Christian worldview. Because a Christian worldview does not deny that certain things happen because of an effect, right? Cause and effect does happen in the world, but that doesn't deny free will necessarily.
Riley?
That sounds good. I'll see how many knuckleheads I can find. And
you found two today.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Riley. Thanks very, very much. The thing about the no free will argument is, if there's no free will, there's also no such thing as intelligence. You just believe what you believe because it was determined, not because you made intelligent choices. So I do not understand how someone can believe in science or even behaviorism or and not believe that you have a choice. Because that's what becoming convinced about something is saying, okay, I've got enough data. I'm now convinced that science is telling me something real.
Yeah, the science is a good example, Si. There is no such thing as scientific inquiry if there is no such thing
as why would you bother inquiring?
Right?
You just like
Which is why science grew up in a Christian worldview, by the way, in the Christian West and not other places. So that's a good point.
888-318-7884. Our number, our guest, Don Johnson, and our topic, how to talk to a skeptic. If you would like information or some tips or tricks, or I don't want to say tricks because we're not trying to trick anybody, but some things you haven't thought of before about how to address your skeptical family members or your skeptical friends or even your skeptical enemies. We go now to Robert in Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM. Robert, your question for Don Johnson.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So my question is, I have a sister who's actually become a huge skeptic of our faith. We've been cradle Catholics all of our life. And her main reason is because of the whole annulment process. She's going through the process right now, and she's kind of given up on it because one of her friends is also going through the annulment process, and he is trying to become a Catholic priest. And my question is, why can he go through an annulment process to become a Catholic priest, even though he's been married for so many years and has four kids? And could you explain that whole process and why it's different for, say, someone who's had a a bad marriage and actually needs to get separated from their spouse, and then someone who wants to get separated just to become a Catholic priest.
So your sister is, in other words, scandalized by the annulment process of the Catholic Church.
Yes, at this point, she's completely given up.
Okay.
So on one hand, Robert, and thanks for the call, I'm gonna punt on the whole annulment process as a somewhat new Catholic myself and not an expert in that whole thing at all. I'm going to punt on that, and we'll leave that to if one of the experts or if Cy wants to address it. Being scandalized, though, and I'm glad you used that word, Cy, I think that gets to more the heart of the issue. She is scandalized by certain things that happen either by Catholics or in the name of Catholicism, and this has driven her away from the faith. And this, again, is quite common. A lot of people leave the church because of bad experiences they've had or things that they don't quite get or things that are objectively wrong. I'm not saying – I don't know what this process is. I'm not going to dig into that. But sometimes people are scandalized by things that are objectively wrong.
Yes.
Right? And so it's okay to admit that, I think, as a Catholic by saying, you know what? That is messed up. Whatever it might be, that's messed up. I think we need to work on that. We're all sinners. And that being honest about that, and I think one of our archbishops just recently did a nice homily about that, and I'm sorry I can't remember his name, but about it's okay to admit that we've got sinners in the church and people do things wrong.
I think it was Archbishop Dolan in New York.
Yes. Yeah, I believe you're right, Si. And this is a great point. So on one hand, just because we have people that do stuff wrong, and I'm not saying – I don't know what this process is, so I don't want – to speak too much to that, is not a reason ultimately to leave the church. And I think that exploring that a little bit more with your sister might be healthy. Ultimately, the reason to join a religion, any religion, is because it's true. And if Catholicism is true, she should remain a Catholic, not only because it's true, but because it's true about the most important things in the world. If it's true, it's the truth about everything. And so you need to stay a Catholic, regardless of some of the stuff that goes on. And so I would push her there. Now, again, that is going to require a lot of conversation and just, you know, working through, all right, is being angry at somebody reason enough to leave the church or the whole process? And is this the official teaching of the church? And, you know, there's a lot of things I think you have to explore with that.
Robert, any follow-up with Don on that?
Nope. I guess I just got to do some more research and figure that out.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Robert. Now, the thing that to know, though, about annulments is it is entirely possible to be married for for a long time and to have children, four children, whatever, and that the church will find the marriage is invalid. The marriage validity does not have to do with the amount of time people have been together. It has to do with what happened when they got married. If someone is married to someone else on the day they get married, it doesn't matter how long they stay married or how many children they have, that marriage is invalid, because if you have a valid marriage already existing, polygamy or bigamy or whatever that would be is not acceptable. So if there's an impediment to marriage, if there's something that's in the way of actual sacramental marriage happening, then the church will declare the marriage null, because the marriage is null. It doesn't matter how long people may have lived in that circumstance. So, and I know that's a tough one. The church doesn't dissolve valid marriages. It can't. Nobody can. Nobody can dissolve a valid marriage. It's only a declaration on the church's part that something at the very beginning, something when this started, was not in the condition it should have been in for this to be a marriage that could actually happen. And that could be if there were fraud involved. It could be very many, many things. So, Robert, thank you very much for that question. I want to read you a Facebook question from Thomas on Facebook.
All right.
And Thomas, and you may have to continue after the break with this because we're coming up nearer and nearer to the break. But Thomas wants to know, how do we share our faith in these days of sound bites? And I know that leaves a lot open, but I actually like that. That's a very
sure.
good question. What's the answer?
Here's what you need to do. First, you need to get online, get yourself a nice picture, get a meme, get like two or three nice words there, and post it.
Post it
loudly and proudly on your page. No, it's a great question. We do live in an age of sound bites, and that's why it requires a little bit more work to be an effective evangelizer, because you got to get beyond them. I mean, you simply do have to get beyond the sound bites. You do have to get to the root of the issue and get to know people and ask them questions and see what their experience is and what their what their perspective is and where they're coming from. And yeah, it takes work. You have to be able to relate to people on an individual basis, like we talked about earlier. And so, yeah, the soundbite thing is dangerous because, you know, we get so much thrown at us each day. But I think then it actually helps us separate ourselves from the crowd when we're willing to pick up the phone or have coffee or whatever with those people instead of just posting another meme on their Facebook wall.
Before you were a Catholic, did people try to convince you to be Catholic? And were there ever any unsuccessful attempts or some kind of evangelize
you? I do not remember anybody ever trying to – that's a good point. I don't know. I don't remember anybody ever trying to make me a Catholic. So
and when you did move towards the Catholic – because you were raised a Christian.
Yeah,
you were
sure.
Were you baptized as a Christian?
I was actually a very non-sacramental tradition, and I was not, in fact. But so I was baptized when I entered the Catholic Church. But no, they tried to stop me from becoming Catholic. I got a lot of that. But
not the Catholics. The Catholic. I mean, we wanted you.
Well,
I mean, some Catholics maybe didn't want you, but the rest of us wanted you. All right, I got a follow-up question on that when we come back. But if you have a question about how to talk to a skeptic, it is a skeptical world we live in. And skeptics can be very, very dismissive. That's another thing maybe we would talk about a little bit, is how to get through that dismissiveness. All that and more, 888-318-7884, our number. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Most men will do almost anything to avoid deep theological discussions. Well, you don't need a doctorate in theology to listen to and enjoy the Catholic Cafe. Join me, Deacon Jeff Drzymski, along with my trusty sidekick, Tom Dorian, as we try and make manly sense out of living the Catholic faith.
The Catholic Cafe, Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern and Sundays at 5 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Don Johnson, our guest this hour. Don, the maker of the movie Convinced, the author of the book How to Talk to a Skeptic. And our topic this hour is how to talk to a skeptic. I want to go back to Facebook with another question, because this actually gets to at some of what I was trying to talk with you about before the break, before we were so rudely interrupted by spots. David on Facebook asks, I am working with youth in our parish, and they are some of the most skeptical of our time. what's the best approach for them? And that they've almost been schooled in skepticism, I think, these are teenagers.
Yeah, they're very cynical. And I feel like we as you consider yourself a Gen Xer, Si, and maybe you're right in there, right?
My wife says we're baby boomers.
Okay, well,
I don't know.
I feel like we grew up very cynical and jaded, and everything was something to be sneered at.
Right.
And our kids now have taken that sort of to the next level, where everything we put out there, they automatically assume is sort of prepackaged and not authentic. You actually see this in things like, and this is actually a part of an answer for him, but you see things on this like YouTube videos, the ones that are very popular with the kids and the ones that aren't. You can put together a very highly produced, flashy YouTube video and have it do nothing. You can get some kid with a cheap iPhone, maybe there is no such thing, but a cheap iPhone doing a very low production.
There isn't such
a
thing.
There is no such thing.
That would be an Android phone.
Making a little video and getting millions and millions of views because it came across as at least authentic. Like they're actually making some sort of proper point. You're not trying to sell me something. You're just telling it like it is, right? And I think that's one of the first things we need to think about when we're thinking about reaching the youth is, are we trying to package something that we think they'll accept? Or are we just going to be honest and open and authentic with things like the struggles that we face and the pain of trying to follow Jesus in this culture and the straight teaching of the church? Or are we trying to water down some of the teachings of the church to make it more palatable to the youth? It's actually, I mean, the youth many times are more conservative now than their parents because they see that, you know what, I don't want all of the, you know, easy, prepackaged, glitzy stuff. Just give me authentic. I don't care how hard it is necessarily. Just give me the hard teaching and give it to me authentically. And that's where I would start. The several other aspects of that. In fact, one I would like to mention, I know this, I don't want to, again, open up too many cans of worms here, but I would emphasize the relationship with Jesus and not tie that relationship with Jesus to too much else that's going on in the culture. This, I think, is a big mistake we're making on many fronts as Christians in America today, is that often our Christianity is very closely tied to something else, right? It's very closely tied to politics or whatever it is. Or even, I mean, pro-life or whatever, right? Hey, I'm as pro-life as anybody, but realizing that ultimately I need to get you into a relationship with Jesus, and you don't necessarily have to accept the entire package that I bring, you know, as a baby boomer or as a Gen Xer, or all my political affiliations or all of that. People were surprised. We talked recently on my show, Si, about the Nashville statement, which is a group of evangelicals came out with a statement about same-sex marriage. Pretty standard orthodox statement that I'm sure, you know, Catholic answers could agree with as far as I can tell. And they were shocked at how many of the youth were just rejecting it. They're like, I don't want to hear about it. Yeah. It's not because of the teaching, I don't think, as they studied it, as they asked the youth why. It's because, you know what, my parents or my teachers or whatever, they lost all moral authority with me a few elections ago, this sort of thing, right? Like, there's so many things that are tied up with your version of Christianity that I'm not really going to listen to you too much anymore. And so, again, I think we need to distill it down to, are we trying to build a relationship with Jesus or aren't we?
Right. So sometimes I almost feel like what you're saying is sometimes we get in our own way if our heart really wants to share Jesus with people, but say I mix that up with my politics in my sharing of Jesus. Now, not only should you know about Jesus, but listen, these people over here are there. Or I mix it up with whatever, you know, whatever my preferences are, whatever my all these other things. I'm actually getting in my own way because maybe I don't really have a heart for sharing Jesus.
Well, and maybe that's more the issue, Si, because people are like, well, can't I share politics? No, I'm not saying don't share politics or don't have political beliefs or anything like that.
Right.
But I think when we interact with people, don't we have to see them first and foremost as somebody who is going to stand before God one day?
Yeah, right.
As a soul who needs to be forever in his presence in heaven, that's got to be, I think, our first priority.
Yeah.
And if my interactions with them is chasing them away a little bit, right? Like, is right. putting up a roadblock, whereas they know that I'm Catholic. They know all this stuff. They know I go to church. And now they know that I'm a jerk. Right?
Like, right.
That's got to be a bit of a problem.
Yeah. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. How to talk to a skeptic is our topic this hour. 888-318-7884, that number. Don Johnson is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH. Again, Don, you know what? I'm going to go to a call. I have a question, but I'll get to my question in a second. I want to get to this caller. Benjamin in Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on EWTN on Sirius Satellite. Benjamin, your question for Don Johnson.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I was discussing theology with a Baptist today, and their specific concerns were the necessity for confession through the clergy, and as well as why we worship and pray to Mary. And I apologize, I'm a little bit undercatechized, very undercatechized, my apologies. But I tried to explain by praying to Mary, we hope that she'll deliver the prayer through Christ, and Christ would have the power to grant it. And, you know, we appreciate her role in the fulfillment of Christ's triumph over evil and his duty in life. And then with the confession, I tried to explain how Peter founded the church and was the first pope, and the papacy and the pope is kind of like the sitting head of the church while Jesus is temporarily away. And should he return, I would presume that he would assume head of the church again. And that I thought that Jesus had bestowed the power in Peter to administer the sacraments in his name while he was away. But I'm not sure if what I said was correct or not correct, and I wasn't really able to convince him, so I had to refer him to the catechism. But I'm really embarrassed about not knowing the answers to that and being able to clearly and concisely explain it and convince him. So I wanted to ask your opinion, and again, I apologize if any of that was inaccurate.
That Benjamin, I'm really happy that you called, because, I mean, to some degree, we're all undercatechized, and these things are not always easy to answer. I mean, even when there's goodwill on all sides, it's not always easy to answer those. So the question that he had was, why confess to a priest?
Sure. Why he can't just confess on his own through his own prayer directly to Jesus, and why the necessity to go through the clergy?
Well, partly because the Bible says that. I mean, it says confess your sins to one another in the book of James, chapter 5. So, I mean, if James teaches that you must confess your sins to one another, there's nobody who should be saying, I can just go directly to God and I don't ever have to confess to someone else. I mean, that contradicts the Bible, the plain meaning of the Bible in that St. James gives us in his letter.
But here's the thing with that, Cy, and as a former evangelical, not quite Baptist, but very close, you can always interpret every text in some other way. And so here's what I mean, maybe Cy has some direct answers to your questions, but here's actually what I usually do in this situation, Benjamin, other than refer them to Catholic.com to get extensive answers to each of your questions about Mary and about confession. Please go there. But I generally, in the same way that I do with atheists and materialists, with evangelicals, I will generally start to ask them questions about their worldview. And with a Baptist, for example, ask questions like, do you believe that God is interested in having any sort of intermediary in working on earth? Like, does he ever use other things or other people to accomplish his work on earth? And if they say no, then tell them, stop going to church, put away your Bible, because you don't need those preachers, you don't need those Bibles, you don't need any of that stuff, because God doesn't need intermediaries. You just can sit back and interact directly with God, because he's not sacramental at all. The fact is, they probably don't buy that, but they probably haven't thought about that, right? They think, well, yeah, I mean, God, sure, I mean, we need that preacher and we need that Bible. Why is that? Why do you need the preacher? Why do you need the Bible? Because God is interested, of course, in using intermediaries. God works through people. God works through things. And so just even thinking about the fact that there really isn't very, there aren't very many people out there, evangelicals or Protestants, that are fully non-sacramental. And by that I mean that don't think that God uses intermediaries. Just even establishing that fact, I think, helps to get your Baptist friend more towards the church. Like, just, you got to get them open to even thinking, well, in principle, would God ever use such a thing as a priest? Well, he sure did in the Old Testament, right?
Like, right.
In principle, would God ever want you to go somewhere to experience his presence? Yeah, he sure did in the Old Testament, right? The Old Testament is very sacramental. And so, I know I don't mean to skirt your issue, Benjamin, but I think there's an underlying philosophy with many evangelicals in America in particular that is anti-sacramental, but only to a point. And they haven't actually thought about some of that philosophy and realized that, oh, do I actually believe that God would never use intermediary means to accomplish his goal? And if so, what do I do with the Old Testament, right? And so that's sort of the direction I would go.
Benjamin, is any of that helpful to you?
Sir, thank you very much for taking the call. I will tell him that. Thank you so much.
Can I give you one more suggestion? If Catholic Answers has this website, catholic.com, and if you just type in a question, you will get resources. There's videos there. There's things to read online. There's books. There's all kinds of stuff. So if you do have questions like that and you're stumped, you can always say, hey, let me just look that up and I'll give you – we try very hard to give a fully Catholic answer there. Not a perfect Catholic answer, but if we can, a fully Catholic answer. Javier, here in California, your question for Don Johnson.
Basically, what I'm questioning, or the question that I'm trying to get answered, is the history of the Bible. They're skeptic of how it became, like it was written by man, and so we shouldn't trust these other men that have written the Bible.
Okay, fair enough.
Can you flesh that out for me just a little bit, Javier? What exactly is the – they're saying that, well, we got it from man, therefore it's not trustworthy?
Correct, yes. Yes,
so,
correct.
So sort of a Dan Brown type thing in the Da Vinci Code. This was his big, you know, insight, apparently, that, oh, man, the Bible was actually written by human beings.
Way to go, Dan.
And he thought, you know, like, this is something that really destroys Christianity. And of course it isn't. I mean, of course, we as Christians believe that the Bible was written by human beings.
Some of them are named in the books that they wrote.
Where else did we get them? But it actually speaks to an important point when it comes to addressing skeptics who are Protestant and evangelicals in particular. They may not say this, but again, having been one, I know that we sort of operated as evangelicals with the assumption that the Bible kind of dropped from heaven, that the Bible just showed up one day, and this was God's divine book, and because of that, we accept it as you know, holy and righteous and, you know, without error and all the rest of it. When you actually start to dig into how we got the Bible, and of course we got it by people writing letters and this sort of thing, that it makes sense how we got it. You know, when Jesus walked around in the early church, they didn't have one other than what we now call the Old Testament. They had the Jewish scriptures. As the church grew, we got letters and other writings that we now accept as the New Testament, and this makes a whole lot of sense. But just because humans wrote it, of course, does not mean that we don't think it's divine. In the same way that Jesus is fully human and fully divine, he, through his Spirit, enabled us to get writings that are both human and divine. And so I think the objection applies more to the notion that, well, the Bible dropped from heaven, and if it didn't, it can't be trusted. That's not what we believe as Catholics.
Does that help you?
Yeah, that helps me out a lot. Thank you.
Again, I would recommend the Catholic Answers website. I feel like I haven't recommended it so much as I am today. I mean, today I'm recommending it a lot. But Where We Got the Bible is another place you might go, from Dr. Michael Barber's book. Where We Got the Bible is a very, very helpful one, and you can get that at Catholic.com as well. Oh, I should probably say this because I have not said this today. Did you know, Don, that our winter sale is underway?
In fact, did know that, Si.
Did you? Oh, yeah. You knew it already?
Yeah.
It seems premature to me. This doesn't feel like winter, but all books, CDs, DVDs, ebooks, tracks, and MP3s are on sale. The sale runs from now until the end of the year, which will actually be right in the middle of the winter. So our winter sale will end in the middle of the winter. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. Just use the promo code WINTER. I think this is a Christmas sale.
Disguises.
I'm just saying.
end of year sale.
Yeah, right. You can save up to 20% on all that stuff. You can even use the discount to save on Mike Aquilina's brand new book, The Apostles and Their Times, available right now at shop.catholic.com. Let's go to Ed in... Oh, no, we got to take a break. Sorry, we'll be right back, Ed, after this to take your call.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 10:13, when sending 72 disciples out to preach and heal, Jesus told them, "Whoever listens to you listens to me. Whoever rejects you rejects me. And whoever rejects me rejects the one who sent me." In preparing them for his future absence, he gives further evidence of his intention to found a church and to give it authority. Today, when Peter's successor, the Pope of Rome, speaks, the whole world listens. Even their very resistance to his words testifies to his great influence, an influence that originates far beyond his own person. Whoever listens to you listens to me. Whoever rejects you rejects me. For over 2,000 years, his church has made him present among us in Scripture, in sacrament, and in her authoritative teaching. Such can be found nowhere else. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Man, time flies when you're having fun. Don Johnson, my good friend, our guest this hour, Don, the maker of the movie Convinced and the about to be made. What are you? I guess you're in the process.
We're in the process
of
right
making,
now. Unprotected.
Unprotected, the story of the sexual revolution.
Unprotectedfilm.com. Please go there, check it out, watch the new trailer. We just dropped a new trailer for it, a little teaser. So, yeah please.
Ross over at the New York Times, say his last name.
Douthat.
I never know how to pronounce it. A piece on Hugh Hefner when Hugh Hefner passed.
Yes.
Called Speaking Ill of Hugh Hefner. I'm not super thrilled myself about saying mean things about people right after they died, but its critique of the sexual revolution was undeniably
on.
One
of the few articles I posted on my Facebook page. I did post it. And
right.
I was on the air the morning after he passed, right? Just within minutes, you know, of learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, the man did a ton of damage. In fact, if you go to I have an extensive discussion about the evils of porn and Hefner at donjohnsonministries.org. It's not good.
The sexual revolution is not a raving success, and yet we see the purveyors of the sexual revolution seem to be completely unwilling to see what is right before everyone's eyes, that we have damaged our culture.
It's very similar, I feel like, to smoking denial and during the Cold War, like the anti-communists, very similar feel to that, where it's not a good thing. The data's in front of us. We can see it.
Right.
Yet we're just going to keep holding on to our ideology.
Right. Like,
no.
How bad did Stalin have to get before you would say, no, Stalin's not a good guy? Like, pretty bad. And we can continue to pray and fast for the recovery of our society and also the recovery of many souls so hurt and damaged by the sexual revolution. We go now to Ed in San Jose, California, listening on 1260 AM. Ed, your question for Don Johnson.
Okay, thank you. I'm concerned regarding the problems we have with the teenagers going out into the world, college or otherwise, and skepticism. For middle schoolers and high schoolers, I can think of five books that I really like that are student editions. One of them is The Case for Christ. Another is The Case for the Real Jesus.
Wait, hang on, Ed. I'm starting to see a theme here, and it's a Lee Strobel theme. And you're talking to two fans of Lee Strobel. Is that what you want, just to recommend that that young people read Lee Strobel's books?
I think that they're good tools that we should be promoting in our parishes.
My own feeling about Lee Strobel, who has written all these The Case for books, starting with The Case for Christ, is that he just needs to write one more. I'm just waiting for that one more Lee Strobel book called The Case for the Eucharist, because once he gets there, we'll be fully in his camp. But a Protestant minister himself now, a former radical skeptic, any thoughts on Lee Strobel?
Yeah, I love the man. I consider him a friend. I visited with him several times, interviewed him just recently when his, as you did, I think, Cy.
I just had the greatest time visiting
him. Yeah, he's a really good guy. And his movie is fantastic, called The Case for Christ. Not only should you read his books, you should watch the movie. I think it's the best Christian movie I've seen, like Christian
movies. Because it's a really good movie.
It's actually a movie.
Yeah.
So it's really good.
Right.
And listen, here's the thing about Lee. He argues that Christianity is true. And that's not a small point. Like, that's a big deal. People like Jennifer Fulweiler, by the way, who's a Catholic broadcaster, you know, great woman. She was initially converted at least to contemplating Christianity, and now she's a strong Catholic,
right,
by The Case for Christ. And so, absolutely, we should be encouraging and reading Lee Strobel's stuff and realizing that if Jesus is true, if the resurrection actually happened, then that's the foundation of everything else we do. And so, great tools.
Ed, thank you very much. And I'm glad we were able to agree with you about what a fine person and what fine books are being produced by that fine person in Lee Strobel. And, there's lots and lots of other resources. I mean, C.S. Lewis, also not a Catholic, but many, many Catholics have benefited a great deal, as have evangelicals and mainline Protestants. And in your theology, in your way of understanding evangelization, how important is it the meeting Christ part, you know, like being introduced somehow, whether it's through fiction,
right,
or nonfiction or a movie or through a personal interaction, actually coming to meet Jesus?
Well, I can't think of anything more important, right? I mean, you've got to meet Jesus, and where you meet him is sometimes secondary. And in fact, in the movie, I made it a point to make sure that this plot point was in there. Some of the people in Convinced, these strong Catholic converts now, had to actually leave the Catholic Church for a while, find Jesus in an evangelical church, and then come back to find the fullness of it, to our shame, right? To our detriment.
Right.
But you got to find Jesus. And think, you know, books like Lee Strobel's books, we do something at our parish called the Alpha Course, which was started by an Anglican. And the whole point of it is to introduce people to Jesus Christ. We obviously do our Catholic spin on it, and it's not a non-Catholic course. But of course, Jesus is it.
Yeah. I'm so glad we could agree on that, Don. Melody, I guess that'd be a good place to end the week. Just end. Jesus is it. Goodbye.
Drop the mic.
Because that's what it's all about. Melanie in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. I'm sorry that I have to ask you to be quick, Melanie, but we have a short amount of time.
Okay. Hello. My question is something I am stumped on and do not know how to respond to a non-denominational Christian that I met. I told him about how Jesus told St. Peter, "You are my rock, and upon this rock I build my church." And in response to me, he told me that was Jesus just doing a play on words, that Peter means rock. And so in the same way that Peter told Jesus, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God," Jesus said, "And you are Peter, you are rock." And that it wasn't him designating him as the rock of the church, but just telling him, "Yes, and you are rock, just as I am Messiah." So I'm stumped, and I don't know how to respond
to him.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Melanie, for that question. It's an incredible coincidence that he was talking about a rock and his church at the same time, but they're not related to one another. But you go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, the quick answer is, it was a play on words, but it also was the rock of the church. Although, Melanie, go to Catholic.com to get the full answer, and we'll wait for the experts to give you. But again, in interacting with non-Catholic Christians, I think it's always important not to get bogged down into the Bible interpretation debates, because they are endless. They're just endless. You can always find another interpretation somewhere. You can always just say, well, that seems like the obvious reading, but I don't read it that way. And so start to ask, all right, how do we understand the Bible? How do we interpret it? That's more going to be the question, I think, that'll get them towards the Catholic Church.
I like to go to John chapter 6 and say, well, okay, well, what does that mean? But where it says, unless you eat my body and drink my blood, you shall not have life in you. So we can start talking about our own experience of the Eucharist. Don Johnson, you're a fine man doing fine work, and God bless you at undertaking Unprotected, the new movie about the sexual revolution.
Unprotectedfilm.com, donjohnsonministries.org. Always fun to be with you, Si. Thanks.
You got the plug in first, and then you said, always fun to be with you. Thank you to all of our listeners. It's always a great pleasure. I told you it was going to be a good Friday, and it was a good Friday. See, I kept my word this week. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.